Blog Talk Radio.
The eagle has landed, the pig is in the poke, Thundercats are go. Live from 20 nautical inches inside the Bermuda Triangle, it's the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Everybody, happy to have you aboard. It's the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. I'm Joel Fortis on this fine Sunday evening. We've got a big show planned for you tonight. Lots of NBA talk with the offseason, the draft coming around. Baseball, we're just about into trade season as well. We'll update U.S. Open, big things happening there. We'll talk a little NASCAR with Nick Robot Holt. It's going to be a big one. Buckle up. We're ready to go. I'm joined on the phone lines, as always, by a man with a PhD in life and a master's in uncommon sense. It's the smartest man alive, Dan Luig. Hi, Dan.
Taking time out of my educational schedule to educate the world.
We're also joined on the other phone line by a man whose crushing insomnia is definitely bordered then by his, well, his ability for narcolepsy. It keeps him perfectly balanced. That's Mike Schotte. Hello, Michael.
Happy Father's Day to everyone, especially to Antonio Cromartie, owner of 25 of the world's worst ties.
And Sean Kemp, father of lots of children. Let's get this rolling here. We're going to start with baseball today. Dan, we've got some breaking news, at least as of today. Earlier it was reported that Edwin Rodriguez quit as the manager of the Florida Marlins. Maybe not such a huge deal. Florida flies under the radar plenty of times in Major League Baseball, but the pattern that's developing here is one that's becoming a little disturbing. As you mentioned to me right before the show, this is the second Marlins manager to quit in June in the last 2 years, and when you look at some of the guys who have walked through the Florida clubhouse only to depart over the last few seasons, something is going on. They're losing a lot of good managers there.
Well, this is one. You knew that something was going to happen. He was on the hot seat coming in. Managers down in Miami do not have a long shelf life or a long leash. And he was already a guy that was rumored to be there. And when your team at first was moving into first place and doing well, and then you follow it up with a 3-20 record over your last 23 games, that's going to be a challenge. And so he decided he was not going to take the heat for this. He's walking away. Team accepted his resignation earlier today down at Tropicana Field for Interleague facing the Rays. And they proceed to lose anyways without him. Obviously, it isn't him. But take a look at the guys who've gone before him. You have Freddy Gonzalez, who left last year. He was good enough to replace Bobby Cox over in Atlanta. And the guy before him, or at least a couple years before him, Joe Girardi, who gets manager of the year and then promptly gets fired. Then goes on to replace Joe Torre in New York. Those are two of the most famous franchises in baseball, guys who have come and gone through Florida. And their penny-pinching ways is definitely a challenge where when you see the quality of managers going through, you have to wonder that something else is up down in Florida.
Mike, if you're a major league manager and you are offered that position in Florida, what do you want to know from ownership before you get started there?
Well, I think the most important thing to figure out is always what's going into my bank account. And I think that question needs to be the first thing asked, but not the last thing. So it's not just about, is this my big break? Is this going to pay me significantly more than my, you know, bench coach or hitting coach or third base coach position? this could be a stepping stone for a lot of people. But some stepping stones are false. Some will just sink you back into the drink. And Florida is becoming that place where, sure, you're going to get your first big break, but it's not going to be as big as you expect, and it might be you that's breaking.
And it might be over a lot quicker than anyone expected. Dan, the Florida Marlins have been up and down throughout this season here, one of many teams that has been a little bit disappointing, although maybe the expectations were not all that high for Florida going into it. They're certainly not ready for their fire sale parade yet. Which teams here, though, as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline, which teams are we talking about that really need to be blown up already this early in the season, those that could be potential sellers? And then who needs to load up? Who needs to add those final pieces as they make a stretch run for the fall?
Well, I think the first team you can look at that needs to be blown up, take you right back to Chicago with Sunday Night Baseball bringing us the New York Yankees playing at Wrigley. And it just... it's another one already where it's wait till next year and wait till next ownership decides to spend money. Because at this point, the Cubs are 29-41. They're already 9.5 games back, and they don't have too much of anything going right for them right now. Pitching is not that great. You have hitting that has issues, and guys that are in walk years where they're going to try to get rid of some of these veterans and see if they can't load up on some more younger players that they can work with and try to build around. I guess the only other team that I would mention is there's a couple that are, you know, that are already out of it. I mean, Florida's 12.5 games back, but a lot of it's just young talent. Guys are just waiting to rebound. They don't have a lot of guys to get rid of. Their closer, Leo Nunez. Houston's 27-46 and 13 games out. But again, they're already a young club, and they're just trying to build their way back. So there's not a lot of teams that have bad records that just need to blow it up. Kansas City perhaps has a couple of guys where they can get rid of some veterans as they're doing their youth movement, and it's starting to come pretty well. Some nice quality players coming up there. Eric Hosmer, for an example, who's already doing well for them. They can find a couple other guys that can add to that core. That would be good. Teams that need to load up, Yankees for one. They do not have the talent right now to match up against against Boston. And so they are a team that needs to find pitching as much as possible. Their bullpen is a mess. Their rotation is so-so in the back end. Outside of them, maybe Washington is rumored of wanting to try to make some deals happen. They're still themselves 9.5 games back and 2 games under 500, but they're looking for guys that can help them not just this year, but next year and the year after.
Dan, anybody out there who... going into the trade deadline, you say don't mess with anything. We've talked about the potential buyers and sellers here. I know after the break maybe we'll throw in a couple of other names of guys who might be on the move now. But are there any teams out there where even if they're in a middling record, you say don't touch this because you might be in the playoffs by the end of the season or at least you're on the right track for next year?
You know, I would say that one that comes to mind immediately would be, I mean, you could point to the obvious Philadelphia. I mean, obviously they have the game's best record right now, 45-28, and they are just, their pitching is dominant. They have enough hitting. Yeah, they're looking for maybe another outfielder, but they don't need to rock the boat too much there. The other one I would say is St. Louis. This is the team that they're just waiting for Albert Pujols to finally click, but Matt Holliday, Lance Berkman is going to be the NL Comeback Player of the Year this year unless he gets hurt. Colby Rasmus, the pitching has done well enough. Kyle McClellan has been picked out of the bullpen, put into the rotation after losing Adam Wainwright, and done really well. They're just waiting for him to get back healthy and get going again. But they have enough talent where people may say they may want to try to add something, but I think they're good to go over there. Otherwise, Texas really wants a relief. To kind of help out for the 7th, 8th inning to set up Neftali Feliz. And I just don't think that they need to, again, try to rock the boat too much themselves either.
We'll take a quick break here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Talking plenty of baseball when we return. Lots of NBA talk, including the draft and offseason, both just around the corner. Here we've got NASCAR and U.S. Open news. It's a huge show. Don't go anywhere.
I look good. I mean, really good.
Hey, everyone! Come and see how good I look! I'm a man who discovered the wheel and built the Eiffel Tower out of metal. brawn. That's what kind of man I am.
Don't act like you're not impressed.
Son of a bee sting. She's turning the entire office against us.
You scorpion woman!
Loud noises! I don't know what we're yelling about!
I immediately regret this decision.
Welcome back. It's the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geek Radio Network. Joel Fortis, Stan Lewig, Mike Schotte hanging out with you here on this Sunday evening and beyond. Be sure to check out the Knee Jerks from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Monday evenings only on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Join Greg Eno and Big Al Beaton as they talk everything Detroit, Michigan, Midwest, and world-related sports. That's the Knee Jerks, 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Monday evenings on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Dan, we're talking a little Major League Baseball. We've talked now about the teams that either need to stay put, those that might be buyers, sellers, and so forth. Let's talk about some of the players, some of the names that could be on the move, either because they're really at that point where they have to be trade bait, or because one of the big dogs might be coming after them and offering a deal that nobody can refuse.
Well, I think that the biggest names that first off come out, the number one guy in this trade deadline is shortstop Jose Reyes from the New York Mets. This is a guy who has been very electric at the top of the order, a guy who can steal a base and really do some damage at the beginning. And especially at a premium position like shortstop, he's been playing well defensively as well. And again, he's in his walk year, so it's only a rental. And there's talk of him trying to be the next $100 million man. And if he's healthy, that's the only major question he's had, because when he's been healthy, he's been a top five shortstop in baseball. So that's the prize of the trading deadline. Other guys that could be on the move, looking at the Minnesota Twins, if they right now they're on a resurgence, trying to work their way back into the Central almost like clockwork this year. But otherwise, they have some guys with expiring contracts who could be good rentals. Jason Kubel, outfielder. Jim Thome, if he gets healthy. Denard Span is another guy that could be available. If you're looking for bullpen stuff, Oakland has a Grant Balfour or Michael Wirtz, two guys who are also under contract beyond the season, so they offer some cost control there. Again, we mentioned Florida's closer, Leo Nunez. He's arbitration eligible, and he could be available. So those are some of the guys right now that really stick out that could be available. There's rumors that the Tampa Bay Rays, even if whether they're in it or not in it, B.J. Upton is very much on the market right now. And if you're looking for a gold glove center fielder, he would be your guy to target.
A couple of other names I want to ask you about, Dan. Let's go to the two teams, both in the National League, who have had well-publicized financial problems here, just a sign of the times. That would be the New York Mets, and the Los Angeles Dodgers. When you talk about those two teams, it might not be a matter of needing to blow things up play-wise. Both teams have actually hung around 500 at least, although the Dodgers are almost 10 games out of that now at this point. But for financial reasons, you mentioned Jose Reyes, but under what conditions could the New York Mets be getting rid of a franchise cornerstone? I mean, Reyes obviously has a contract here, but what about somebody like David Wright? What about with the Dodgers, Matt Kemp? What kind of offer do they need to get where they simply look at the checkbook and say, we got to get rid of this guy no matter how much he produces for us?
Well, when looking at the Mets, and David Wright is definitely, it depends how you grade him out. And if you listen to the comments from their owner, he would tell you that David Wright is good, not great, and not a superstar. And so when you hear comments like that, it really makes you feel that that's a guy that could be moved. I think they're trying to play it very delicately there, because that fan base is very frustrated by the sounds of things, and no one wants to hear that your owner no longer has the money, especially in New York when you see what the Yankees do. So they're already the ugly sister of the New York baseball. So you have to watch how you trade, and it has to be for something good. There's a possibility it gets moved. I just don't think it gets done at a trading deadline. This is the type of deal that gets done before the general manager meetings during the winter and the off season. But when you look at a guy like Matt Kemp, Frank McCourt's trying his best to keep a hold of ownership of the L.A. Dodgers. Right now he's not getting much help from Bud Selig, and definitely not from his former wife as they're going through their divorce proceedings. But I believe they just struck a deal I think that allows him to keep ownership of the team. I wasn't able to check too much into that just yet. I believe that was in the news yesterday. But I don't think you have to hold on to a guy like Matt Kemp for the very reason that if you do have to be forced into selling, that's your number one ticket right there. This is the guy that looks like he could be the National League MVP or is definitely one of the candidates for it. So you want to keep a guy like that because that star power is what can help you sell a team versus getting rid of him.
Let's take a look here at one more baseball item before we go to the break. Of course, we've got lots of NBA talk coming up here. We'll talk NBA draft offseason. We'll talk about, obviously, the finals that are now complete a little bit. We've got some NASCAR news and notes. We'll update major stories out of the U.S. Open. But before we do that, Dan, last week we touched on the fact that baseball is kind of sticking their tiptoes into the water right now, almost testing to see what reaction is. This idea that there not only might be realignment, which would make sense, moving one of the National League teams back to the American League in order to balance things out. Now, we don't know which team that might be, but not only moving a team cross-league, but the idea of possibly doing away with divisions altogether. Why is this the time to make that change, and why are they talking about it? Is this really just floating the idea out there to see, you know, what the pundits have to say, what the media has to say, fan reaction and so forth? Or is it really just something that maybe leaked before they really even were seriously thinking about it?
Well, this is definitely being seriously thought about and is definitely on the table from both sides. And the reason why this is being brought up now is that it's time to look at the next labor agreement. That agreement runs out at the end of this season, and they're not worried about money concerns in this one. That looks to be good where there's not a lot of labor troubles that are on the horizon. But with the new labor deal coming, now is the time if you're going to consider it, because you're going to probably have to wait another 5 seasons or whenever the next deal expires to try to bring something this big into the picture. There was already talk about adding another wild card in there, and so now that they're already talking about changes, they're thinking now is the time to do it. And right now, the Players Association is willing to consider it, and they're very much ahead of it because what they want is to try to give more teams the option of being in the race. Because if more teams are in the race, that could be more money for them that they'll spend on players. So both sides are looking at this with very much an open mind. The question is, how is it going to change? I would say that it's a good 90% possibility that realignment in some fashion happens. It's just a matter of how drastic of a change happens. The most easiest way to do it is to take someone like the Arizona Diamondbacks and move them, or I should say the Houston Astros would be the easiest one because that's the NL Central that has 6 teams. And move them to the AL West. And this way you have them with the Texas Rangers, so you have the nice in-state rivalry, and then you bump that division up from 4 teams to 5, and it evens everything out. But again, that's if you stick with divisions and not just go to a best 5 teams on each league making it to the postseason.
You heard it right here from the smartest man alive. That's Dan Lewig on Major League Baseball Talk. Here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit of U.S. Open. We've got plenty of NBA news and notes to get to, plus some NASCAR stuff. Nick Robot Holtz will hopefully be making his triumphant return to the Average Joe Sports Show. That's all right around the corner. Don't go anywhere.
Ding, ding, ding.
What do we have for, Johnny?
Even if you put your square with the Lord, the state of Mississippi is a little more hard-nosed.
We know where you are at all times. That's our business.
Oh, I'm in a glass case of emotion.
No. It's Iowa.
Holy shnikes. It's butt cold out here, and I'm fresh out of beer.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Happy Father's Day to everybody. It's the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Be sure to stop by Tuesday evenings to the aforementioned network. It's the Sports Geeks flagship show, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Tuesday nights only on the Sports Geeks Radio Network, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Joel Cordes, Mike Schotte, Dan Lewick hanging out with you here on the Average Joe Sports Show. Mike, you and I are not necessarily huge golf fans. We kind of open our eyes when there's something big going on. And this U.S. Open, we talked last week quite a bit with Bleacher Report's Will Liebenberg. We anticipated some big stories, but I don't think anybody could have written the script for what Rory McIlroy is doing right now.
Yeah, and I don't know if people who are just casual golf fans or people who just have always paid attention because Tiger Woods is around, I don't know if they understand how great this U.S. Open has been, not just for Rory McIlroy, who's been phenomenal, but also for golf. Because Rory McIlroy, leading after the first two rounds, if I have it correct, the last person to do that is Jim Palmer, and he's the only other guy that's done it. So Rory McIlroy is placing himself in a small way among golf's very best. And Rory, you know, as many people know, young Irish kid, one of the youngest golfers on the tour, had a pretty bad collapse at the Masters and is now roaring back to win the U.S. Open. I believe if I'm reading the scoreboard correctly, he's won it. It's a foregone conclusion at this point that we're broadcasting. And that's phenomenal. That's something that we can talk end over end over end about, that golf just isn't exciting when Tiger's not playing. But Rory is about the age that Tiger really hit it big. Obviously, Tiger was a phenomenal golfer even a very young age. But Rory has the chance now with, you know, that kind of trial by fire at the Masters and now roaring back to destroy the U.S. Open competition. He has a chance to be golf's next big storyline, and he's a young kid, charismatic. This could be golf's turning point from the Tiger Woods saga.
If this were a PTI, I would be coming in at the end here to say I think you meant Arnold Palmer, the golfer, not Jim Palmer, the former major league pitcher, nor, of course, Robert Palmer, the pop rock sensation. Mike, the Rory McIlroy story obviously is a huge one because of the youth that's there, because of the numbers involved. Obviously, there's history here. Yet is it fair to suddenly put him up on this pedestal and say he's golf's next holy grail? We knew a lot about Tiger Woods coming up, you know, prior to the time that he really hit his stride. McIlroy obviously has had talent. He's had some success in the past. Are we really putting him up on that pedestal, though, or is this just, you know, a good story for now and there's no way that he can sustain this?
Well, no, I mean, I would almost say the opposite, that, yeah, we knew a ton about Tiger Woods. I think he was 4 when he was on TV golfing with his dad and doing trick shots. And then obviously when he went to school at Stanford, a great golf program, he became their athlete of the year many times over. But he was a story that the media latched on to a long time before. And McIlroy, his story is a little more genuine. He's gotten here like Tiger because of really good golf, but there hasn't been cameras following him his entire life. He hasn't had that intense spotlight. He hasn't had the push that we know Tiger's father put on him. Rory has just been a really good golfer, and he's really young, and I think there's people who would say that the smile that Tiger exuded when he was 18, 19, McIlroy has that. And I think it's a true story, it's a genuine story, not to say Tiger Woods wasn't back then, but I think it's a feel-good story that golf is searching for, and he's not an American. That's the one downside for, obviously, our culture, but worldwide, he could be golf's next big superstar.
Let's shift gears now from the U.S. Open, and I have a feeling that we'll be talking to Will Liebenberg next week after this all pans out and the dust settles a little bit. So hopefully we can get Will back on the program next week. He's obviously from Bleacher Report. But let's move from golf to the NBA a little bit. The only segue I can have maybe is Charles Barkley, who is famous for both but for different reasons. Let's talk a little bit about the NBA Finals. Obviously that's over and done with, so we don't want to rehash things. But one of the big-time debates now that's out there, and I can't tell you how many articles I've read, how many times this has shown up on SportsCenter, on all of the different roundtable shows, is trying to rank Dirk Nowitzki in the pantheon not only of NBA players, but especially of power forwards. You obviously have a lot of guys, whether it's Karl Malone, Charles Barkley especially, who put up phenomenal numbers and were kind of the pinnacles of their era at the position, and those two guys did play together, or at least during the same time period, I should say, but never won championships. And then you have other guys like Tim Duncan, Moses Malone, Kevin McHale, You can talk about Bob Pettit way back in the 1950s. Kevin Garnett even has to get thrown in there now, not only statistically, but because he does have a ring. Guys who not only put the numbers up, but the titles as well. And, of course, people are trying to rank where Dirk Nowitzki lands in this. It's obviously a little bit too soon because his career is not over, but then you talk about, like, guys with Duncan and Garnett, and their careers aren't over either, although getting close to the end. So the question that I have here for you, we'll start with Dan. Where does Dirk rank in the pantheon of those NBA power forwards, the ones I mentioned, Duncan, Karl Malone, Moses Malone, Charles Barkley, Kevin McHale, Bob Pettit, Kevin Garnett? Can we put him in the same sentence now because not only of the numbers where he is, but also because he has the title? Or is it too soon to start throwing him in there yet to say, yeah, he'll be there in a little bit, but let's give him some more time first?
I think he definitely deserves to be in that category and speaking with these players because he's been extremely consistent throughout. This is his second finals chance. He's always been the guy. And the way he played in the postseason, obviously very fresh in everyone's mind, but he's been extremely good and a perennial all-star throughout the majority of his career here. And he offers a unique blend of talent, a guy who can step back and take a three at that size, being 7 foot, and still be able to go down in the paint and crash the boards and to take some of those things. So he offers a very wide range of a talented game. And I think he definitely deserves to be in that category.
Mike, same question over to you. Obviously, Nowitzki's skill set is one that is definitely unique in that list of players, and now he has a ring on his finger, unlike Barkley and Malone. But where really does he rank among those players?
Well, I think there's a guy who fits with Dirk on this list, and that's Alvin Hayes for the Bullets. Hayes was never an MVP, but he was an offensive superstar. He didn't play great defense, and I think Dirk plays certainly better defense than he did early in his career, but certainly isn't a stopper on that end of things. I think Dirk falls right now, and again, I speak right now because he's got plenty of career left. I think he's behind the two Malones, Karl and Moses, and I think he's behind Tim Duncan, and he's probably even with guys like Kevin Garnett and Barkley, who, you know, there's legacy questions with Barkley because he never won a championship. Obviously, still one of the best players of all time. Kevin Garnett had a couple of great seasons, and you got to wonder what would happen had he not been in Minnesota for those years. Sorry, Joel. Had he been somewhere in the spotlight that could have certainly, just in terms of fame, given him some more MVPs or possibly given him a better superstar to work with earlier in his career. But I think Dirk Nowitzki is sitting solidly at or just outside of the top five. But I think by the end of his career, he's going to insert himself into, you know, the two or three slot. Again, Karl Malone's a hard guy to beat.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Malone is obviously up there because of the longevity and the numbers. Obviously, the one major knock against him is not winning the championship. And if anything, when this is all said and done, if Dirk Nowitzki is able to stay healthy, his game is not necessarily based on pure athleticism. It's very, very technical. And in many ways, Karl Malone's game was that way, too. He was a phenomenal athlete early in his career, but it was definitely about his mid- to short-range jump shot. It was about his ability to make fantastic cuts, to know where to be at all times, and the numbers just stayed and stayed and stayed. So Malone is a tough one to beat. I don't know if anyone's going to beat Tim Duncan, at least at this point, not only because of the numbers and longevity that he put up, but because of the four rings. That's going to be definitely hard for guys to overtake. McHale is a guy who's been forgotten simply because of the great teams that he played on and all of the firepower around him, and his career was shortened just a little bit because of injury. I think you're right. I think you put Dirk Nowitzki in the same sentence right now as Kevin Garnett. You put him in the same sentence as Moses Malone, although Malone is another guy that history has forgotten who is absolutely dominant in his day but did need help in order to win his titles. Bob Pettit put up great numbers, but again, there's the era questions that are there. Dirk is probably alongside Barkley, as you said. The one thing that is in Dirk's favor right now is, again, the uniqueness of the skill set. Every single one of those guys on the list had something unique about them, but how many of them had something that stands out the way that Nowitzki's shooting does for his size? The other thing I'll put for Nowitzki is when you look at where he started at the beginning of his career as really being mostly an outside shooter, and the way that his career has evolved over the years to really becoming a devastating high post player and a very competent low block player as well. There's not a lot of guys on that list who reinvented themselves along the way throughout their career. You might give Kevin Garnett some props in that he was certainly an athlete, certainly put up the defensive numbers, but he really didn't hit his defensive stride as a technical defender and as a team quarterback, basically, until later on in his career. But that, again, is a mental thing, if anything else. Interesting conversation, one that's going to last throughout the summer, that will be forgotten by the time that next year's NBA rolls around as new stories come out, unless suddenly the Dallas Mavericks are able to get back to the finals and win or lose. This question will come up again with Dirk Nowitzki. We've got plenty of additional NBA talk to get to, plus some NASCAR news and notes with Nick Robot Holtz. That's coming up just around the corner here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network.
We want this and that. We demand a share in that and most of that, some of this, less of that, and more of this, plenty of this. We want it now. I want it yesterday. I want more tomorrow. And the demands will all be changed then, so stay awake.
Why are you the way that you are? Honestly, every time I try to do something fun or exciting, you make it not that way. I hate so much about the things that you choose to be.
I have an excellent idea. Let's change the subject.
Welcome back. It's the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Be sure to stop by the network Wednesday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's the new kids on the block. No, not literally them, but the new ones here at the network, at least, as Ball Don't Lie, the NBA specialist Cody Steger and Eric Nain. Here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's Ball Don't Lie. We'll change the subject a little bit, still talking NBA Finals. One of the other legacy-altering questions that has come up would be for the losers in that, and that, of course, is the Miami Heat. You can talk about where LeBron James stands on that. That's not an argument we need to get into. You can hear that anywhere else. And he's got so much time left in his career that it's really just wasted air at this point to talk about where his legacy would be. What I want to ask, though, Dan Lewig, is what do we look at for the Miami Heat here? We talked for the last 2 weeks, really, about what a loss could mean for them, and I think we all came to the consensus that it'll be a huge story. Obviously, it's a mark against them for the moment, but it's one that will become a footnote if they are able to win a title, and especially if they end up winning a string of titles. No one's really going to remember that. In fact, most people, when they look back at the history books, will look at it as a point of strength, saying they made the NBA Finals in their first season and then went on to win all of these titles. Should the Miami Heat be blown up, or should something happen that they only win one ring, or maybe no rings at all, this will be looked at as a colossal disappointment. But Dan, as they go into the summer, Pat Riley isn't known for overreacting, but he is known for making bold moves. So what do the Miami Heat need to do, and how bold do they have to be? The rumors are already out there. Chris Bosh is obviously the scapegoat in all of this, and that's not really fair. But then also the idea that maybe Eric Spoelstra isn't the coach to get them to the promised land. If you're Pat Riley, what are you pulling the trigger on? Are you adding a few pieces, or are you going to tinker with the whole recipe?
I enjoyed watching Miami collapse and not find a way to get the job done. That being said, if I were looking at the Miami Heat and things to do to improve, my suggestion would be do nothing. There's a reason why they put this talent together, and if they would have been able to pull a few things out in the end, those games were winnable against Dallas. They were right there. They made the NBA Finals. They were there when they, and for being able to go up right with them, the talent is there. But learning how to play with each other, learning how to play with some of the pressures is the biggest change. And it's not time to fire Spoelstra yet, but it is one where you need him to make some corrections. At the beginning of that last game, LeBron James was a focal point at the beginning. They wanted to get him involved. All the talk and criticism had been he had been turned into a jump shooter. He wasn't attacking the line, and he was almost ineffective trying to just be a number two, to be Scottie Pippen to Dwayne Wade's Michael Jordan. And it wasn't working out really well. So they got him involved in the first 5 minutes. He was dominating. He was there. But then, if you notice, they planned no plays for him, really, after that. And so they went away from something that was working. LeBron doesn't have to be the number one, but you have to keep him involved. And the biggest key to these guys succeeding is learning how to get the ball involved with all three and keep them going.
You can look at the Miami Heat right now, and if you keep everything the same, it's on the players. You use this as motivation to say you came up a step short. We're going to reload whatever veterans we can find around you. We're going to hope that guys like Udonis Haslem and Mike Miller get healthy. And, hey, we were in the NBA Finals, and, hey, we took it to six games here. What more do you want? However, if Pat Riley blows this up prematurely, it will always be a what-if question on him for not giving them enough time. So I agree that you keep Bosch, you keep Spoelstra for another year. You try to reload now, having a full offseason to actually go after the supporting pieces and see what you can do. Mike, similar question, but from the other side. Now for the winners, the Dallas Mavericks obviously can hang their hats on the fact that Dirk Nowitzki put on the playoff performance really of a lifetime, of a career. The fact that this team came together down the stretch and the stars were just aligned perfectly for them. But there's some big questions going into this offseason. Tyson Chandler, Caron Butler, both free agents. Caron Butler played a lion's share at the first half of the season to get Dallas off to a hot start. Tyson Chandler was really the guy being credited with turning their defense around and making the attitude shift in Dallas. You have to re-sign those two guys, right? And if you do, there's not a lot of money left over. So do you just try to make one more run with this group, or do you recognize that this was one of the oldest teams in the league and try to make some changes to reload?
Well, I think what's crazy is that the two most important players outside of Dirk Nowitzki to this title, the guys who really wanted it most, are both going to be free. It's not this year, but next year. Jason Kidd and Jason Terry. And both of those guys are a little older, and for the most part, 2012 could be their last year in the league, especially for Jason Kidd. But I think you go to those two first as the leaders of this team, as the veterans, as guys who both from an athletic standpoint didn't look like they were anywhere near done during the playoffs. And you say, you guys are the leaders. We don't want to get in a situation over the next year where all of a sudden your names are popping up in trade rumors. What can we do for you? Because after them, the only guy that you need from this past roster that's a free agent this year, I think is Tyson Chandler. And I think he's at a point in his career where he's sick of jumping around. He really loves this team. And I think he's going to, I don't want to say hometown discount, but I don't think he's going to play hardball and try to get one more big contract out of them. But the other guys on this roster, as good as they were, guys like J.J. Barea, guys like Caron Butler, guys like Deshaun Stevenson who came up big, those are guys that were great for the Dallas Mavericks. Caron Butler obviously would be a boon to come next year because he didn't play at the end of this year. But those are all guys who are essentially movable parts on this roster. You can get guys to play those minutes and do those roles, but you don't get a guy to be a Tyson Chandler. You don't get another Jason Kidd, and you don't get another Jason Terry. Those are the guys who are important to this team. You take care of your core first, and then look at the movable parts. If you can get some of them back, great. If not, you can draft, sign, or train their replacements.
It's also notable to mention that key bench players like J.J. Barea and Brian Cardinal are both free agents. I believe Brea is a restricted free agent, so Dallas can match offers. Cardinal is a free agent outright. He was signed on a one-year contract, and you can bet that somebody's going to throw money at him after the NBA Finals appearance that he had. And really, you're talking about three or four games, but this is a guy who's hung around the league for a long time on zero athleticism and a lot of know-how. Let's talk very, very quickly before we go to the break. Team after my own heart, the Minnesota Timberwolves finally got some good news. Ricky Rubio is coming over, supposedly has signed on the dotted line, although details of the contract have not been made public yet, but the buyout has happened from his Barcelona FC squad. And, of course, the question is, now what? He's there in Minnesota. They have Ricky Rubio. They have Luke Ridenour as a veteran backup. Johnny Flynn could become expendable. Minnesota sitting with the number two pick. They already have three power forwards, basically, in Anthony Randolph, Michael Beasley, and Kevin Love. They can play two out of those three guys together at the same time, but it's looking like the number two pick is going to be Derek Williams. And now you have rumors out there that say Minnesota may not be willing to trade that pick. They may take Derek Williams. They may take Kyrie Irving, even though they really don't need either of those two players at this point. They may take them anyway, and there's supposedly rumors out there that neither Michael Beasley nor Anthony Randolph would be expendable if they take Derek Williams. Mike, is this just more crazy David Kahn shenanigans here with Minnesota supposedly having four power forwards on the roster, or is this simply positioning saying, hey, the Minnesota Timberwolves are trying to up the ante and saying, you better make us a fantastic offer if you want to take this pick away from us? The rumors have been out there that they were willing to trade the number two pick for a veteran scorer like Monte Ellis or Andre Iguodala who could fit their wing needs. So is this positioning, or is this David Kahn just being as frustrating as ever?
Well, I think what has to be mentioned, and obviously my forte is the NFL draft, but when it comes down to positional need, the one place where you bend is if there's a transcendent player in the draft. If you're drafting number one and there's a clear consensus number one overall player, you take him. Because not only is he the best player available, but he's also 21, 22, and you're going to have, you know, room for him down the line, and he's that much better than number two. In the NBA, that becomes all the much more important. You take a transcendent player in the draft, even if you don't need that player, because then what that player becomes is either an asset or he clears one of your other players up as an asset. If Derek Williams or Kyrie Irving is available, been on the record a few times, the Timberwolves have to take one of those two players. If they take a guy like Cantor or take a guy like Brandon Knight instead, that's called settling. That's called, well, we don't really need this other guy, so we'll take someone not as good. When you start dancing with the less attractive women, it's going to be a bad night at the dance. And you have to take the best players. Now, good coaches and good GMs find a way to make stuff like this work. Now, when push comes to shove, if you're at that position and you don't want to take either of those other guys, you get out. You trade to someone else. You trade to the Pistons have been rumored to trying to get up. The Kings, the Golden State Warriors, plenty of people have been trying to get up to that pick. But if you're sitting at number two, you don't not take Derek Williams. He can be that perimeter scorer for you because he's almost a small forward in a power forward's body. You find a way to use him. You don't trade away your best players because they don't fit your system. You fit your system to your best players.
And I'll jump in here to say that if I were the Timberwolves GM at this point, I would trade down this pick. This is not a transcendent draft. Somebody's phone's in the background there. This is not a transcendent draft when you talk about players, and the Wolves don't need a point guard, and they don't need a power forward or really even a small forward at this point. They have those, and those are the strengths of the top three picks. What the Wolves need are center help and shooting guard help, and you don't get that till later. I would flip this, knowing that Irving and Williams both have question marks on them. I would flip this if that deal is still on the table with the Cleveland Cavaliers, giving the Cavs the two pick and taking the four and the eight picks basically coming in from Cleveland and the Detroit Pistons, and then you turn around and you don't feel bad for drafting somebody like Enes Kanter. You don't feel bad for drafting a wing player, even if it is somebody like Kemba Walker, even if it is Kawhi Leonard or somebody like that, Jordan Hamilton. You take one of those players at that point and sleep well at night, knowing that you address those needs, and if you can get another player back for the number two, you do it. I wouldn't be against trading the number two right now for a Monte Ellis or Andre Iguodala if that could be done. The Wolves have the cap space to make that happen. We'll talk more NBA offseason and more NBA draft right around the corner here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network.
Finally, those capitalist pigs will pay for their crimes, eh? Hey, comrade!
What if he shot me in the face?
That's the risk we were willing to take.
And you choose to thank me by throwing a knife in my head?
There's no crying in baseball!
I want you to know that your father loves you both very much.
But he feels like a girl.
So did Martina Navratilova.
What if we
were you doing exactly?
I was eating pop.
Putting cat filthy emptiness inside me? But it'll help.
You're going to need a bigger boat.
We've got a bigger boat on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Be sure to stop by Friday evenings. It's the Sports Talk Soup with Vito. It's the late show, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, recapping all of the biggest news and notes from the sporting world. That's the Friday Sports Talk Soup with Vito, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Joel Cordes, Dan Lewick, Mike Schotte hanging out with you here on this Father's Day. We have Nick Robot Holtz hopefully joining us in a few minutes to talk some NASCAR. But until then, we keep talking NBA offseason and draft. There's a lot of other big names potentially on the block. Obviously, Dwight Howard's name is on there after Orlando stumbled again during the playoffs. The biggest rumor would be, of course, the Los Angeles Lakers. Really, this is a historical pick, not because the Lakers have expressed overriding interest, but the Lakers have always stolen their great centers. They stole Kareem Abdul-Jabbar from Milwaukee. They stole Shaquille O'Neal from the Orlando Magic. They stole Pau Gasol from Memphis. Could they be doing this again and trying to get Dwight Howard? Obviously, that would be for Andrew Bynum. It's out there, but now many people are saying L.A. might be more interested in a point guard, seeing as how Mike Brown is the coach, and they may not be going with the triangle offense anymore. And guys like Chris Paul, Deron Williams, transcendent point guards who have both been in the trading news and notes in the last couple seasons, Paul because of the uncertainty in New Orleans, and Deron Williams having obviously checked his ticket out of Utah and now sitting in a transitional place in New Jersey, their names are on there. Johnny Flynn from the Minnesota Timberwolves has been an absolute bust during his couple seasons in the pros. But with Ricky Rubio coming over, and especially if the Wolves do take Kyrie Irving or somebody like Brandon Knight a little bit lower, Flynn is going to be absolutely expendable, but he's young enough and had a good enough pedigree that you might hear his name out there. Andre Iguodala and Monte Ellis are certainly being shopped by their teams right now. If Ellis doesn't go, Steph Curry might. It's a well-known fact at this point that Mark Jackson in Golden State is the new coach. Does not believe that they can ever defend with those two together in the backcourt, and they may try to go a little more traditional. Don't be surprised if Monte Ellis gets traded for Andre Iguodala. Let's talk here very, very briefly with the NBA draft. Mike, you had a list put together. This is a time of year where I think you really start to pay attention to the NBA quite a bit because of the draft kick that you get out of it. Let's talk about on your big board the top five American and international players who would be there. And let's also talk about the top five overrated players that you may not want to touch if you're the GM.
I think starting with the Americans, that I'm going to disagree with something you said before. I think this isn't a transcendent draft, but I think there are two transcendent players at the top of the draft. Yes, they have question marks, but some of the players that haven't had question marks in recent years are some of the biggest busts. I think Kyrie Irving has a chance to be the next Chris Paul. You hate to make those comparisons before a guy plays a step of pro ball, but Kyrie Irving is very good. He's not going to be able to defend the Derrick Roses of the world alone, but he's a very good point guard. He can run your offense. He can defend players his own size. Derrick Williams is a small trapped in a big's body. He can play on the perimeter for you. He can handle the ball. He's not going to be Tim Duncan with the back to the basket, but he is going to score the ball with the best of them. After them, hanging right outside that transcendent territory is Brandon Knight, the point guard from Kentucky. Brandon Knight is very good. He's a little undersized. He's 6'3", but he's lanky at only 180 pounds. You'd like him to put on a little more bulk to defend bigger ones in the pros, but he's probably never going to do that again. He's an offensive point guard. He can be very good for you down the stretch. He goes high as number three. After that is Kemba Walker, another point guard. He is a scorer. He gets to the hoop quicker than anyone. He has the fastest first step in this draft, outside of maybe Jimmer Fredette, but that's a story for another time. Kemba just scores. He's not the best shooter. He's not the best defender, but he can put the ball in the hoop and he can get to the free throw stripe where he'll score even more for you. Finally, my number five is going to be Kawhi Leonard, small forward out of San Diego State. This is a guy who's only going to grow. Right now he's getting a lot of Gerald Wallace comparisons. He's a do-it-all. Again, a small and a big's body. He can play small forward for you, chip in at power forward. He can defend 1 through 5. But this is a guy who's only going to get better. Steve Fisher, his coach at San Diego State, is one of those guys who takes talent and then gets out of their way. He doesn't do a lot of real hands-on coaching. When he gets to the pros, especially with a good coaching staff, he's going to be a very good player.
Mike, we're a little bit short on time. Give me your top three internationals and your top three overrated guys that you don't want to draft at this point, at least early on.
International players, Enos Kanter, a center, he kind of straddles that international American line because he was supposed to play for Kentucky, but then he was ruled ineligible because he had played a little bit of pros overseas. This is a guy there's just not a lot of tape on, but he's almost 7 feet. He's got a big body. He's only going to get bigger, but there's worry that he's just going to be another one of those European big men busts that just can't get it done. He's going to need some time, but he does sit alone at the top of that big man front. Number two, and it's very close for me, is Jan Vesely, the small forward out of Belgrade. This is just a scorer. He's a guy who could have been a top 10 pick last year, decided to go back because he wanted to be a top 5 pick. I think he sits right on the outside of that top 5 this year. And my last guy, Jonas Valencianas, center from Listovos Raitas. He is, I believe he's Lithuanian. Again, just another big. He's a legitimate 7 feet or just outside of 7 feet. This is a guy who can score. He's going to be able to defend players simply because of his height and his length, but he's going to be able to score with his back to the basket. Again, like most international players, probably a year away, but he's going to be very good once he gets acclimated to the pro culture. Guys that you should stay away from. One guy that I'm not very high on is Bismack Biyombo, the power forward and center out of Congo. Chad Ford has been very high on this guy. He's a freak athlete, extremely long. He's already getting Ben Wallace comparisons because he's only 6'9", but long, athletic, can block shots and rebound. But rebounding and blocking shots is something that also is technical when you get to the NBA. He hasn't shown to have that technical aspect to his game yet. And when he gets to play with players who are just as athletic as he is and a little bit bigger, he's not going to be the superstar that he has been in overseas competition. I think you stay away until you're towards the end of the lottery. Another guy I want to stay away from is Markieff Morris, the power forward out of Kansas. He's a really big guy. He's really athletic, but he's just kind of a rehash of a lot of mid to late lottery picks in the last couple of years. He's not very technically sound. He's not going to score a ton for you. If you're looking for maybe 8 rebounds and 5 points at the end of your bench, that's great. But this is a guy who doesn't have a ton of upside because he's never really put his game together. And he's had some of the best coaches in the world trying him all the way from AAU on. The last guy is Tobias Harris from Tennessee. A star in the SEC, which is great. You know he's going to grind for you. You know he's going to score some points for you if you give him time towards the end of your rotation. But again, this isn't a guy who's going to be a very high volume shooter for you. He's not going to be able to defend his position for you at the next level. This is a guy who's going to get you something at the end of your bench, but you don't want to put the weight of the franchise on his shoulders. He's always been a team leader, but taking that next step, he just doesn't have the talent.
If I'm a GM, if I'm GM for all three of the top picks here, if I'm the Cleveland Cavaliers, I am taking Derek Williams with the number one pick. I'm trying to get that number two to get Irving, but if I can't, I'm taking Williams. If I'm the Minnesota Timberwolves, I'm going to go against Mike. I'm drafting Enes Kanter instead of Kyrie Irving because of need, again, unless I can trade down. And then the Utah Jazz simply can't pass on Irving at that point. We'll take a quick break here on the Average Joe Sports Show on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Nick Robot Holtz is waiting patiently. We've got some NASCAR talk coming up next.
I want chicken. I want liver. Meow mix, please deliver.
Mr. Evil.
Dr. Evil. I didn't spend 6 years in evil medical school to be called Mr. Thank you very much.
Meaning to talk to you about that, you should find yourself a safe house or a relative close by. Lay low for a while because you're probably wanted for murder.
I have what doctors call a bit of a weight problem.
I'm a maniac on the floor. And I've danced like I've never danced before.
I'm retarded.
Welcome back to the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Geeks Radio Network. Joel Cordes hanging out with you here. Mike Schotte, Dan Lewig aboard as well. And we're joined on the phone lines. Guy we haven't heard from in a while, but glad to have you back. It's Nick Robot Holtz. How are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing very well. Happy Father's Day, Joel.
Absolutely, and the same to you, my friend. NASCAR was in Michigan today. Recap the biggest stories here from the race in the state I call home these days and the state that Mike Schotte historically called home.
Michigan's always a real fun track. It creates a lot of two-wide racing. A lot of people don't like it because it has a lot of long, extended green flag runs, which creates for what some people consider very boring racing. It was nice. We got to see Denny Hamlin pick up his first win of the year. He's been running a lot better as of late. He was one of the strugglers early on, I believe I talked about in like our first conversation this year. He was able to pick up the win. Kyle Busch and Kurt Busch both get well, Kurt Busch just outside the top 10, but both continue strong runs that they've been on. And Tony Stewart finishing 7th was a must-have for him, as he is in danger of not making the chase were the season to end today.
Kyle Busch has been in the news for a couple of different reasons at opposite ends of the spectrum here lately. Obviously, there's the ongoing feud that's supposedly at least having some dirt thrown over it now between Busch and Kevin Harvick. Probation is over now for Kyle Busch, and he's had a nice run here over the last couple of weeks, I think taking the pole 3 times lately, and a fairly good finish today. Is this sustainable? Is this a motivational thing for Busch, or is this simply a high point of his season that there's no way he's going to keep up?
Kyle Busch has kind of been on the cusp of being really, really good for quite a while, and he's just kind of showing it this year. He has not been able to sustain it for a full year to this point, but he's still relatively young. I don't have the number in front of me, but I believe he's about 25, 26 years old, which in driver's years is extraordinarily young. So it's a guy that's just kind of coming into his own, not really even in his prime as a driver yet, and a guy that's going to contend for championships for years to come, including this year. Whether or not he actually gets one will remain to be seen.
Let's take a look here at races upcoming. We've got two pretty big ones with Sonoma and then obviously Daytona, the big one, really 2 weeks from now. What are the biggest things for race fans to look for, maybe giving about 60 seconds to each race?
Okay, the first talk about Sonoma, it's our first road course of the year, I believe. And that always brings a few different drivers to the front. Jeff Gordon historically has been a great road course driver, and he's having a really good year, having 2 wins already. He's a guy you would expect to contend to win that race, as well as a lot of names that don't run every week. You'll bring in people like a Boris Said, which fans of NASCAR will be familiar with, and those who aren't don't. But he's a guy that runs a lot of like road courses and comes from different types of cars in NASCAR, but comes over for a one-off whenever they hit the road courses. Very different kind of racing, and there's a decent number, not a majority, but a decent number of NASCAR fans that just simply won't turn in next week simply because it's a road course race. Daytona coming up in 2 weeks is always a wild card, just because of the nature of restrictor plate racing and how easy it is to get caught up in a wreck. There are drivers that are historically good there, like Dale Earnhardt Jr., Jimmy Johnson, and Kevin Harvick come to mind. As being great restrictor plate racers, but you can get caught up in someone else's mess very, very easily. It's always fun to watch the second Daytona race. Get to watch it at night. It's cooler temperatures, which helps the drivers with the grip on the racetrack, so that the speeds are a little bit faster than they are in the 500 when you're going during the day, and the track's a little more slick. So you get a little higher speeds. Always a little more excitement, too. Just for the fact of it being at night.
Last minute of the show, 2 questions, so answer quickly. 1, which do you prefer, the road courses or the traditional track? And should NASCAR be adding races at the Brickyard, which is rumored at this point?
I really like the road courses a little more just because it's a change of pace. If they ran, you know, like 5-6 road courses, I wouldn't like it as much. So the fact that they only run 2 a year makes it really intriguing for me. And the answer to your second question is no. I think there should just be 1 race at the Brickyard. I think it's because it's a historic track. It's already like a crown jewel. You know, people want to win the Daytona 500. The second race they talk about that they want to win is the Brickyard 400, unless they come from an IndyCar background like a Tony Stewart, who would actually rather win the Brickyard than at Daytona. So I think 1 is the perfect number for the Brickyard.
Nick, fantastic as always. We hope to be keeping up with you consistently here over the summer. Thanks so much for coming on the Average Joe Sports Show. Have a happy Father's Day, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, thanks, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
For Mike Schotte, for Dan Lewig, I'm Joel Cordes signing off. Everybody have a great rest of your evening. If you liked what you heard here, tell family, tell a friend. We could use all the listeners we can get here on the Average Joe Sports Show here on the Sports Radio Network. We'll see you later.
You can take away our phones and you can take away our keys, but you cannot take away our dreams.
That's right, because we're like sleeping when we have them.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.